I have 10 o'clock, so why don't we go ahead and begin, stay on schedule here. If everyone wants to either bring out their program guide or their app, the app will begin with prayer, and then I'll briefly introduce our speakers. This is session 58 for those of you looking at your guide for this morning. So if everyone has their prayer, we'll go ahead and begin. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities. And may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. What a gift of the Holy Spirit, power to inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen.
Amen. So we're pleased to have with us this morning Brad Stephen and Renee, or Stephen?
Stephen, yes, Stephen. Thank you.
Okay, great. And Renee Gallagher from the Concord Advisory Group. Again, this is session 58, Catholic Foundation Investment Management Strategies. Yep. Thanks for being here and presenting today. And with no further ado, I'll turn it over to you guys.
Thank you. And you got the name mostly right all the way back to second grade. I have two first names, so I was being called Stephen Bradford in the lunchroom, the cafeteria of second grade. So it burns deep for me. But thank you for the but thank you for the introduction. I know Concord has been a participant in ICSC before. Renee and I are both first-time attendees, so I know we've appreciated meeting some different people and sitting in on some of the other sessions. It's been really productive and exciting for us. So we plan to spend about 45 minutes with you today and give you some hopefully some interesting concepts to think about for foundations. And I know many of you know Concord. Just a quick who are we, who's presenting to you today. We are an independent investment consultant, like an investment advisor. We're not a manager picking stocks and bonds or managing money. We're not a custodian. We've been around for 37 years. We're kind of a boutique firm. We have about 130 nonprofit clients. That's all we do. About 50 who are Catholic entities. So we work with both dioceses, Catholic foundations, congregations, so on and so forth. Originally, this session was designed with one of our client executive directors to sort of have an interview and panel format. Many of you knew who that was. She had resigned her position to move to a different nonprofit organization outside the church. So you have me and Renee. We're going to give you all we have today. We brought cookies in the back, too. Now, that sounds exciting, but our surprise, when we walked in here, the previous session had 10 boxes of donuts in the back.
I'm still working out one of them, right?
Yes. And they didn't save any for me. I was hoping they'd at least be left over. So just in terms of what we're going to talk about today, normally when you see an investment firm get up and talk, it's you think, well, we're going to talk about the stock market. What's the interest rate cycle going to do? None of that. No economic forecast. This is more about the business of Catholic foundations and how do you grow your foundation investment practice amongst your Catholic community, looking at it from a holistic perspective. So hopefully that's a different angle. We've spent a lot of time with our clients working on this. And just to get into it, telling you, kind of stating the obvious, almost all the sessions are centered around some form of some of these things outside of the typical governance and fiduciary aspects of a foundation. But the investment management portion sometimes doesn't get a lot of attention. It's fairly technical and detailed, but this remains to be one of the major responsibilities for foundations and your board is how do you steward the assets that you're entrusted with so that they can be collected in a reasonable manner and then given back out to those who are beneficiaries. So these are the primary responsibilities, and I think the message that we wanted to bring today is that, and I was talking with Bill from Northeast Kansas Catholic Foundation just before, if I had foresight, I would have invited him up previously because everything he said was true, especially one thing about the donor. And those donors that the foundation is seeking, whether it be a parish or a wealthy family, it's getting more and more competitive for those dollars out there. And all these little statements and names on the page, as professionals in the foundation world, you've certainly dealt with all these. There's local relationships at play from the financial perspective. There's banks and brokerage firms. Some archdioceses or dioceses have a deposit and loan program that acts as a different type of investment or banking vehicle. And you have the typical turnover. Pastors come and go, so there's this ongoing education need, too. And so how, as a Catholic foundation competing for these endowed or non-endowed assets, how do you build a product or a solution, an offering that stands out amongst this crowd? Because it's only getting more competitive. And really, I think where we're going to drill down today is this notion of where we've spent a lot of time with our Catholic Foundation clients is thinking about the foundation really as an investment management entity. Just like you would see a Vanguard or a Dodge & Cox, some of the big names, what do those very successful investment firms do from an attribute perspective, right? How do they have a growing and thriving business in a very crowded and competitive marketplace? It really comes down to three things. And most of you spend time in each of these areas, but just to formalize this, we think of the outreach as the front end. How do you educate your potential donors? How do you communicate with your Catholic community, the ones who have not sent dollars to you? How do you engage them on a regular and periodic basis? What's your content? What's your frequency? So that whole outreach front end portion, it's a stimulative exercise, but it's very important to kind of keep the pipeline going. The middle is the engine. That's the investment arm, the results and the composition of it. The only thing I'll say about that now is that foundations who have been most successful have been those who have built something different for people that a parish with $500,000 couldn't build themselves. So using the scale and the collective nature of a Catholic foundation to give different types of investments, lower costs, and access to new types of things, differentiated solutions. And then finally, the communication aspect is once they become donors, how do you service them? It's really a back-end client service functionality all the way down to the statements that you send and the content that you create for them. So if we look across the investment management landscape going back decades and decades, the most successful enterprises or firms have had very specific formalized approaches to each one of these three areas. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today is just some concepts within them maybe to take back to your foundation and your board to implement potentially. So with that, I will turn it over to Renee. She'll open up some concepts on the outreach side.
Yes, let's talk about outreach to your donor community. We all know that outreach matters. I've sat in on a number of sessions. As Brad mentioned, this is our first time attending, so I was very curious to get different angles. And one thing that I heard from every session is how important communication and transparency is, no matter what the outreach is about. Typical outreach that you might have to your donors, donor community, might be around a giving campaign, a capital campaign, but are you also including information about your investment program to your donor community? And I think that it's so important to educate your community about your foundation's investment program. This will instill confidence in them to you as an institutional quality investment program. And you'll build relationships throughout this process. And ultimately what you want, and this ties into what Brad was saying, is your foundation becomes a trusted advisor to your community. So again, there's competition out there for your donor's community's assets, and you want to be a trusted advisor. One thing that can really set you apart from the Schwabs, et cetera, out there is demonstrating your program's alignment to Catholic values. And we'll go into that a bit more when we talk about the engine. But if your foundation assets adhere to USCCB guidelines, this is certainly something that can set you apart from other options that are out there. And ultimately, we know that transparency is highly regarded. The key to your foundation's investment program is transparency and understanding by your donors. So many Catholic foundations in the early days, they might have been offering only a single investment solution. That might be an endowment fund where it's a 70-30 mix. That's not really providing a solution. So what we've seen is this evolution of the Catholic foundations to offering multiple investment solutions. So that might be your reserve fund, organizational reserves. You might have a growth fund, a more aggressive fund, and more conservative funds. It varies from foundation to foundation, but what you do want to provide to your donors is multiple investment solutions. This allows for more customization, and it also allows for more flexibility versus a single product offering. If you're offering only an endowment fund, that restricts what the donor's assets, what they might be able to donate to your solution. And just digging a little deeper into this, typically what you'll see is liquidity within a parish or an agency, their balance sheet. They'll have a portion of their assets that need to be highly liquid. And by that, I mean around 90 days liquidity. So this is typically in a money market fund, very short-term treasuries. They will also have organizational reserves. That's short to mid-term. And then finally, long-term assets, and that can be restricted endowment assets or unrestricted. And understanding what your donors have and what their needs are will help you to find the best solution for them.
Just one comment there, Renee, and this is, so the history, as you said, I think most Catholic foundations started with a single offering or solution, and this whole concept of knowing your customer, this multiple investment pools, has been really the byproduct of just listening to the community. And this was an example we included because we see it a lot, where if you take a parish or a Catholic agency, this is their balance sheet, really. They have these different pools of assets that they're thinking about. And as you all know, when you talk to the pastor or someone from their finance council, a lot of them have too much in the liquidity bucket, right? They don't invest, and they should invest. They have the ability and the time horizon to invest. For you, that leads to a different educational outreach component, more about long-term investing, creation of endowment. Yesterday, there were some sessions that showed the benefits of endowments being established for a parish. Others have more focus on long-term investments, and perhaps they have a solution that's with a local brokerage, and they own some stocks and bonds. It's not competitive. It maybe costs too much. And then as a Catholic foundation, you're really focused on differentiating your solution versus what their local broker is providing. So this just gives the framework, and I think this, again, is, I think, the evolution that we've seen, where if you're an executive director or a person on the front lines meeting with prospective donors, it's become more of a conversation instead of, here's our investment product, take it or leave it. Can you fit your assets into it? It's more of, how can we help you, and here's a set of solutions. It's going to be really complementary to the diocese or archdiocese, too. If there's a deposit and loan or savings and loan program that's strong and steady at the top of that, you don't want to compete with those types of things. So it's up to each foundation, but this is the general balance sheet that we see. Sorry to interrupt, Renee.
No. And on the next slide, we have this is just an example. Just a quick show of hands. For your foundations, do you use multiple investment pools, most of you? So this is an example of one foundation that has two solutions. There's a long-term solution if their assets are not needed for 5 years or longer, and then a more short or near-term solution. And this is a very simplified example. Of course, your own foundation might have something different. And if you look underneath, you'll see that the investments correlate with the time frame. So you'll have more fixed income, short-term investments within the 1 to 5 years, and more longer term. This focus is on growth. It will be slightly riskier, and both pools will have adherence to USCCB guidelines in this case. So this is just one example of a solution that a foundation could be offering to their constituents.
Yeah, and it correlates directly to this, right? The most successful conversation we've heard executive directors have is just boil it down to time horizon. Mm-hmm. As Renee said at the bottom, those general categories, if you think about liquidity, anything under 1 year time horizon, you need it for operations of a parish, shouldn't be invested. Keep it in the deposit and loan, keep it in the local banking relationship. But that organizational reserves is kind of like a rainy day fund. There might be a roof needed in a few years. Something might be needed in a few years. You don't know what it is. It's not endowed. So leads to this. Yes, Bill, question.
Just a question.
Yeah.
Maybe the whole group. We have a couple of these funds, but you mentioned kind of the competition with the deposit and loan fund. And so obviously the CFO wants to make sure that parishes are depositing their money in the deposit and loan so that they have plenty of money to loan when the needs come around.
Yeah.
But that middle ground there, and we have two of these funds where they're not an endowment. They're basically an investment account that we now have. But they don't want us out marketing it because, they don't want to be pulling from the deposit and loan. But does anybody else offer like an investment account like that through their foundation?
Yeah, we do. I'm through Concord. I'm with Central Florida.
Yes.
So but we have a discussion with the CFO about how we have discussions with parishes, and I'm working with a parish right now who wanted to start, they're calling it the Harmony Fund. It's for music and liturgy. And they have some money in that they're going to want to utilize kind of over the next 3 years. So what we're doing is we're starting a fund with the diocesan account for that, that they can use over the next 3 years, but they're going to be depositing some additional funding that they hope not to need, that they want to grow, into a reserve account, so that they want it to be almost like a quasi-endowment.
Exactly.
They want to just be able to use the interest off of it. So after we had the discussion, we went back to the CFO just to confirm that this was good, we weren't going to get any pushback on it, and we got the thumbs up. So and what we talk about sometimes too is if there's a big donation that comes in that they don't have an immediate need for, but they might in the future, to put it into one of these type of accounts, depending on, we have a kind of a 3 to 5 year and then a 5 plus year. And so depending on when they think they might need it, put it in there, they get better return on it. And usually the deficit is the chance.
Anyone else have any comments for Bill? That's exactly right. Two really good examples. When that doesn't exist on the liquidity side, there's a vacuum, and then the Catholic community is kind of going to all these different places, right? Local relationships, maybe not getting good rates, maybe not doing what they should with it. So that's exactly the solution mindset that Renee talked about. You understand your community. You're filling a solution, so you have a conversation. And Bill, to your point, there's really no competition in that middle one. Even for most dioceses and archdioceses, the deposit and loans competition on the liquidity side, but that 1 to 5 year time horizon, when this has been put into place, and you've seen this in Central Florida, this can move pretty quickly because it's that kind of in-between area. It's not long-term. It's not banking money. And it just usually sits in the bank not earning enough. So if you can get a couple extra percent, as Renee said, in a conservative portfolio, it's a win-win for everybody. That's the concept behind it. Yeah. Yes, you know that as well. Yes. And it works quickly, and it gains a lot of interest. So it's all back to the outreach. If I could boil it down to that, now instead of coming in and saying, we have an endowment product, put your money in there, you come with some solutions to their challenges. And that's a concept of running a investment business, if you will. So we didn't want to get too deep into the details and what the percentages were, but that's the concept for a Catholic foundation. Maybe just a few minutes on the investment offering and results. This is the engine, as Renee has referred to it. But this is really the performance function, and what you build here is what you go to a parish finance council, you're going to have some investment people on that, within that group, and they're going to ask you for information. They're going to compare this against maybe their advisory practice or some friend that they know. So this is where the big competition occurs, and this is why it's so important to think through the lens of differentiation, right? Trying to build something that a Catholic agency with $1 million couldn't put together on their own. All the things that Renee has touched on. So a few of those concepts, and before we jump in, just wanted to, I know most of you are familiar with this, but this is really the ecosystem from an investment framework. And on the outer ring are all the different entities that support the foundation and the board and their stewardship of the assets. So this is a pretty common framework. In the nonprofit world, foundation world, the larger you get, the more sophisticated the entity is. This becomes more of a specialist approach where clients, foundations, endowments are hiring individual firms for each of these buckets on the top, right? Custody, asset, otherwise known as investment management, and then consulting or advisory, having a best-in-class service provider for each. When you're smaller, and some organizations prefer this, many bundle those three together, right? There's a bundled approach. And that's not uncommon. I would say the specialist model is much more common in the nonprofit world. And that's one of those differentiating points. When the foundation starts to grow, hiring best-in-class service providers in each of these buckets at reasonable costs based on your scale and size creates a powerful governance structure when compared to some turnkey approaches. And it makes it a more sustainable program where if you have an asset manager or custodian, a bank, who the relationship's not going well, in a specialist-oriented approach, you can remove just that component instead of just replacing the entire relationship. That's one problem we've heard from foundations who have shifted the approach. When if you work with a Charles Schwab or a local bank that's not doing a good job and you have to go seek someone else, everything has to change. In this type of ecosystem, as we call it, you have best-in-class providers doing different things within the portfolio structure. Actually pulled this from a client presentation. This is content and collateral that was shared with a foundation client to a prospective donor who had some investment experience. And I wouldn't worry about the pie chart on the left. That's very similar to what Renee showed earlier. Think of that as an example long-term portfolio that you would offer to someone with endowed assets. Everything on the right is really the framework that our foundation clients try to express to their community, is that through the scale and size of the collective foundation, they're able to build a series of investment partnerships with high-quality institutional firms. The advantages of this, and some of these logos were put in just to demonstrate, here's who we work with, here's the scale and the expertise that we bring to bear through our program. There's things like an Agincourt, which is, they manage bonds or fixed income, but it's a firm in Richmond, Virginia that does only bespoke, customized accounts for nonprofits and institutions. So a parish, if they wanted to invest with Agincourt, they couldn't do it, right? It's reserved for larger investors. Same thing with someone like Wellington, who's a really well-known large privately owned investment firm in Boston. They build a Catholic values global equity vehicle that leverages their entire global research team. It's tip of the sword investments. It's only available to investors that have at least $25 million and above. And then there's some other examples on here, even like a Kayne Anderson at the very bottom. They do some small cap equity, but they're a firm where a parish with $50,000 to invest could buy their mutual fund just normally. It might cost you 1.4%, but foundations with their size and scale can get a customized USCCB separate account for 80 basis points. And so where we have found success with executive directors and board members communicating in the outreach portion is trying to create a distinction between what the foundation brings through its governance and oversight and scale versus what a parish finance council could do with, you know, somebody on the council managing the assets themselves. And I think the more you can do to drive a wedge between those two things, this is the value proposition of the foundation.
And can I just add something here,
please,
too? You don't have to go alone on this. So one of the things that we have found very beneficial to our foundations is us as investment consultants, we will be there alongside the foundation to attend parish meetings, participate in investment program webinars, to provide reporting. We have access to systems that can provide more sophisticated benchmark reporting. So all of these things, you know, if you're really utilizing your network, this network that Brad showed us on the previous slide, you can go out there to your donor community and really show yourself as an institutional quality investment program. I think there can be some reticence to go out and talk too deeply about the investment program with your donors, because then you might find yourself, what is that saying, over your skis? So certainly utilizing the expertise of your network is very beneficial to you.
Yeah. And you can partner with firms like Christian Brothers here, right, who very well known in the Catholic community. They've kind of gotten out of the business of managing the entirety of foundation portfolios, and they've been very clear about that. But they remain significant partners in foundation investment management. So, and that's, again, the benefit of kind of going to that specialist ecosystem or network where you can get a group of best-in-quality institutional partners, leverage their collective expertise instead of just one turnkey solution. So this is just an example. And I did want to touch on, Renee, you brought up the socially responsible investing. I know everyone in this room is very clearly aware how important this is to your donors. It's the top of the list. Right. And so I think for communication perspective, on this chart, we have on the left more of those SRI stands for socially responsible investing. The second column, ESG, if you've heard that terminology, environmental, social, governance. Catholic investors are very familiar with what's on the left. That's clearly stated in the USCCB guidelines. We were involved a couple years ago when the USCCB guidelines themselves changed for the first time in 18 years. We were asked to provide feedback to the USCCB Working Committee, and the outcome was some of these more ESG type of statements. And they're not clear, but what it's done is it's created a shift to the things on the right, where there's sort of this concerted effort not just to exclude certain stocks or bonds that maybe would be in conflict with Catholic values, but start to engage through proxy voting, other things, and then start to think about dedicating money to companies that have good practices or have an alignment of interest. And so I think one of our big conversations now with Catholic foundations is how to communicate that you're doing all these things. And we've been surprised, but our executive directors, when they progress through a conversation with a parish or another agency who's prospective, and they'll say, well, we're doing Catholic screening in our portfolio. The local bank manages that, and we're aligned with USCCB. And then they'll see it, they'll share with us to provide some observations. You'll see six or eight companies in there that clearly are in conflict with Catholic values. And so I think there's been this evolution over the last decade or so where many Catholic entities used to have a restricted list, right? Companies that shouldn't be bought by the investment manager. And the manager wouldn't buy them, and sometimes they get in there, sometimes they don't. But it's changed to be much more dynamic now. And we have found more success taking a top-down approach to this, getting it into the investment policy statement, sharing that information with the partners on the previous page, and then having someone like an advisor or consultant actively run and oversee that process. So, again, that differentiates the foundation from the parish who's not buying General Electric or Johnson & Johnson. This is a very dynamic approach that I think not everybody's there yet, but this is where it's progressing to. And the very final thing on the bottom, positive strategies, you'll hear the terminology impact investing thrown out. This is almost part of every foundation conversation. This is a really colorful chart. We'll make these materials available to you after the presentation electronically. But it shows the span of responsible investments. All the way on the left, there's a column that says traditional. And that's like if you buy a Vanguard index fund, they're just investing. They're looking for returns. Unscreened, no socially responsible. All the way to the right where there's philanthropic efforts, where you're making grants. And the investing is not seeking a financial return. It's more of a gift, if you will. But where people are settling with impact investing is in that thematic column, where you're looking for a combination of benefit to society or the issues you pursue and a market-based financial return. So you're not sacrificing any return, but you're making investments in companies that also have a dual impact outside of just financial. There's a social impact. I can say many of our foundation clients have started talking about this. Some have started investing in strategies like this. There's a really good framework for this. The United Nations is a leader in this type of impact investing. They have what's called these Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs. There's 17 of them, and think of them as focus areas. It's a whole big grid. And our foundation clients can consider investments that target all 17 of those areas. It's health and wellness, income equality, environment, water and natural resources, the whole list of them. But you can be specific into things like affordable housing. You can focus on environment, or you can do very broad-based. But I would say as far as activity goes with different types of investments that foundations are pursuing, this is a very big area where there's been board and director interest.
I think, too, with the impact investing, that's part of the USCCB guidelines of promoting the common good. Mm-hmm. So, originally it was, like Brad said, more of this avoidance, avoid harm. But now USCCB guidelines have incorporated more of this active approach with ESG and now as well with impact investing. The challenge with impact investing, there's a lot of assets, about $1.2 trillion, but it's also understanding each manager's strategy because there's some private strategies that are not liquid. There are some public funds that are very liquid. So it's understanding what the inventory is out there. That's another area where you rely on your consultants, advisors, and your network community to help in that process. Is that something that you're seeing at all, the impact, maybe some rumblings going on about it? Exactly. Yep. Right. That's a great example of it. And I would call that, so we divide the impact investing into, I refer to it as financial first, where you're really seeking market returns. And that is an example of impact first, where it's very niche. It's not necessarily a public fund, but you do expect a return, but it might not be a market return.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot out there with impact investing, and it pleases me to see that there's some talk about this, but certainly that's a whole other large conversation.
Yeah. I did like that you used UW as a reference. Welcome to the Big Ten, by the way.
Oh,
I'm from Pennsylvania, so we're in Big Ten country. Look forward to seeing you on a regular basis. But that what you described there is probably the most targeted impact-oriented investments. In your local community, it's a transaction with a known party or someone in your network. So it spans from that all the way up to hiring a manager like you saw on some of those pages where they have a global mandate to buy private companies or publicly traded companies that traffic in those types of engagements as well.
In the example that I gave, who would be sort of a coordinator or something like that? Would it sit at the CFO level? Would it sit with an investment advisory group level? I never quite was clear on how that part works.
Yeah, it depends. So if it's an investment, then it comes through the investment committee. The CFO would be involved. It gets accounted for in, like, reporting that we would provide. Certainly, as you get more broad, it's all there. If it goes to philanthropy or impact first, sometimes that's more of a strategic investment for the foundation. They're placing capital in the local community. It's not thought of by the investment committee as an active investment, so it may just sit with the CFO or a different committee. But most of them would fall under the guise of the investment committee. You're welcome. All right, final comment on the engine. We've lingered a little longer on the engine than we tended to. Then I'll hand it off to Renee for some closing comments. Fees and costs. This is another big one. If you think about the competitive nature for foundations and all those different people trafficking around, I realize this is really hard to see. It's really just meant to draw your attention. But first, about investment costs and expenses. Everything we've talked about, one of the byproducts of having size and scale and access to institutional firms is you're driving down your investment management costs, right, to institutional levels. Fees have been coming down in the industry. Foundations are in a position to negotiate and take those down further. We've seen it. We work on this for every client. So the first thing is transparency, and that whole chart on the left, it's something we use for clients where we list on the left margin. I know you can't see it, but all the investments, the custodian and the advisor or consultant, all the participants in the investment program, you know exactly what you're paying down to the dollar and percentage decimal point. So transparency for the board and your constituents is the first thing. And then on that left chart, there's some green information. We're very big about peer comparisons. So showing you where you stand versus each row has its own peer group, and then you settle down on the bottom right, even though you can't see it. The foundation board would say, here's our costs and expenses, and then here's a group of other similarly sized not-for-profits. Here's their median or average cost and expense. This is 39 basis points versus 63. I can't even see it up here. It's so small. But that's a powerful comparison on the investment side. That's cost efficiency is so important as part of your value proposition to potential donors and current. And then how that stacks up in the context of your overall fees is critical. So being as efficient as you can on the investment side helps you with your administrative expenses. And I always, in these conversations, say from a competitive standpoint, kind of put the middle of the road at 1%, right? That's where a lot of brokers and advisors will peg their fees. If you're trying to pull assets from a brokerage or Charles Schwab, they're charging that parish 1%. So a lot of times it's 1.5, sometimes it's 2. It skews upwards, not downwards. But when you put your investment costs and the foundation's administrative fees together, you want to make sure you're in a comfortable, competitive position. So if you have, let's call it 50 basis points of investment expenses, and then your administrative fee is 1.5%, so your total cost is at 2%. When you walk into a room with a parish finance council and they're paying 1%, they're going to need a big differentiation in terms of what you can provide in the investment engine. And these are active discussions for our clients. They're constantly looking at these tiered fee schedules. Bill, you said it, based on size, the bigger you are, your effective fee goes down. It depends on where the foundation's life cycle is. If you're early life cycle, more startup, you need a higher effective fee. The bigger you get, the easier it is to take your basis points down. But I would say being very diligent about fees and expenses on the investment side and how that contributes to the overall fee, that's part of that competitive landscape that we tried to articulate earlier.
Okay, so I'll spend just a couple minutes on communication because I want to give us a little bit of time to talk since we're a small group here and ask questions. But this is an example of a governance model. So again, going back to the institutional quality of your investment program and bringing it your investment program to that institutional quality, you will want to implement some type of governance checklist. This is the one that we at Concord use for all of our clients. And you'll notice, I just want to take you to this annual basis. The asset allocation, fee review, peer group analysis, Brad just talked about the fee review, investment policy statement, risk management, all of these are reviewed on an annual basis. We split it out by quarter. Having that consistent cadence is really important to make sure you're in the right peer group fees, to make sure that your investment policy statement is still appropriate. Are you covering USCCB guidelines? Are they correctly covered within your investment policy statement? As we know, these are all IPSs are dynamic documents, so these need to be reviewed annually. And this is just another way that you bring an institutional quality to your investment program. And I have heard some people that will use this template, if you will, for other committees within their foundation because they find that it's really useful. And then on the next slide, this is reporting. So, of course, you want to provide investment results to your donors, but you have other stakeholders. So you have reports that you want to submit to your board, to your investment committee, and to foundation management. So this reporting is, again, institutional quality. It's not a one-size-fits-all. If you use the same report that would be, more technical in nature for the investment committee, if you're using that for your donors, that might not resonate. It might be too complicated. The donors' reports will be more succinct. They will be much more concise. So this is another example. Again, this is an area where you probably won't go it alone, but you'll look to your network, to your consultant for support in this area to provide the data needed to produce these reports.
Yeah. And again, back to the original statement, the governance that Renee showed on this page far supersedes what a parish finance council is doing on their own. Right? That's one of the strengths, is the expertise and oversight of a foundation board and investment committee, and then even down to the reporting. For you as business owners, really, you're running a company that's communicating with lots of different stakeholders. You need different styles and levels of information in terms of reporting. It can get pretty hairy if you give too much, so having some custom work behind the scenes. It's just, again, back to the traits of a successful investment firm. It's the front end, the engine, and then we call this the back end, which is the service and the reporting. So I think with that, that was really our prepared comments. We have a beautiful slide here just kind of summarizing the 45 minutes we spent. We do have cookies in the back. I know if you've eaten a donut, you're unlikely to go for a cookie, but they're Insomnia cookies, so they are quite good.
They're good and they're fresh.
Yes.
Wanted to ask if there are any questions or any comments. I appreciate your comments thus far, but we're such a small group that I'd love to hear from you.
I'd like to zoom in on that report to the client.
Let me see if I can zoom in. Renee, this is your computer. Come on over.
I can also send you one, because I think even if we zoom in, I
think at the bottom right where it has that plus.
Here, I'll switch
buttons.
Okay. Which one are you looking at? This one here?
Clients.
Clients.
it's still a little bit difficult to see.
And by clients, that means the donors, right? That's part of your reporting, giving them just enough to satisfy that frisky finance council member, but not too much to make you a full-time back and forth.
I think some of the main areas, obviously the performance results, asset allocation is done in this type of pie chart, and then they also appreciate the socially responsible aspect of it. So very high level. And then again, you know, just a summary of the size of the portfolio, but not going into information like price to earnings or not as much technical financial data.
We use this exact for when we're having discussions with future clients.
Right.
So when I'm having a conversation with a donor, I'll show them this endowed portfolio. We also have the reserve because the donor could also start something. The beautiful difference between the endowment, which is permanently restricted, and one of our reserve funds is that those are 100% available to the entity at any time. And sometimes a donor, again, wants to make a large gift. They don't want it to be permanently endowed. They want it to be used for a future campaign or something like that, and they can put it in one of these vehicles. But it shows, you know, the returns over the lifetime that we've held that.
Right. They want to see that history.
They want to see that history of return. And so when they see that history of return along with the fact that we have that high USCCB connection, I think ours is 99.6 at this point. But, yeah, so that really speaks to them. So this says a lot when you're in a discussion with it.
And these can be updated fairly consistently. So this is not data that you're providing, you know, it's not 2 years old. This is something that you would want to provide most likely quarterly.
Yeah, quarterly is right. And it's like a prospectus, if you will. I mean, if you wanted to invest in the Vanguard S&P 500 Index Fund personally, you would go to their website and pull in their one-page synopsis before you do it. That's what this is meant to be. It's a tool, as you said, for stimulating conversation. Yeah.
Thank you.
Are you feeling good switching spots here? This feels good. I should have started over here. Another quick question. Yeah, please.
For an organization like ours that has 3 or 4 investment vehicles, investment vehicles, today, you say you would do a comprehensive breakdown of all the fees we're actually paying? Like, would you drill down to use the mutual fund for only get, say, Morgan Stanley?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It happens at the fee level. The USCCB guideline level too, you look inside the mutual funds to detect problems, but that type of reporting, it's made available to you internally, number one, for your own information, but then it's repackaged in things like this for you to share in the outreach portion. But yes, it goes all the way down. Full transparency. Don't say that. Strike that from the recording. Question.
I have a question that may not be as direct for you guys, but maybe for all of us in this room that's doing campaigns or larger capital campaigns. We're getting ready to do a study for our next significant or major gift campaign. And I want to integrate planned giving in a much more significant way than we certainly have ever done in the past, and use the campaign to leverage that. I think investments is a great place to integrate into that and with our parishes, because the parishes get this connection with donors. So I don't know how to do that yet, but because I don't think it's enough just for us to say, oh, we're going to do a blended ask for a planned gift. That's great. And we all think we should be doing that. But I think we have to be much more proactive about how we bring this conversation and decision and education into the equation, both for our parishes and for our individual donors. I don't know how we're going to do that yet. So I'm just curious either for you guys or anybody here in this room. But I do think the investment strategy as part of the planned giving program also brings credibility, because it brings third party trusted partners like yourselves, whoever, into the equation, which I think only lifts us up, if that makes sense.
Supposed to be giving the microphone, so it's part of the recording. Sorry about that.
Yeah, so I think Corey Howitt talked a little bit about, you know, the mission that we have in legacy. We're all called to a particular legacy. So that resonated with me. And I know Focus really has talked about how we bring our donors on mission. So I think that's one of the ways that, you know, we'll go back, our team will go back and really look at our messaging and see how we can incorporate that terminology into the messaging that we're doing. And so likely that would be part of, you know, campaign materials, brochures or what have you, where we're asking them to really think about that. And then, as you said, We've been blessed. We do utilize Concord as our partner, and they've walked with us on the journey going to parish finance councils, you know, and sometimes it's not friendly going into that committee group and they're wondering what you're bringing to them or, you know, what you might be forcing on them if the bishop has asked them to meet with you or what have you. And so they've been there. They've been gracious. They answer questions. They speak to the market. Many of those finance councils will have professional investment, you know, investment professionals, and our team can't speak to them at their level, but Concord representatives can. And again, they've walked with us. So I think your point, Patrick, about making sure you have both messengers and how you get that out. I don't know if you guys talked about it because I popped in another session, but one of the slides that Concord put together for us that has become my favorite and has been most helpful is the governance slide. And that's where we help communicate to the pastor and those financial committee members is how they are involved in what we're doing with their funds and how they have a role and they're part of the decision. And Concord helps us extend that. So it's just not all done for them. If they're a parish that wants it done for them or a school or a ministry and they want to hand it over, we got it. But if they don't, we go out and work with them and they make decisions and they talk to us. So that's been very helpful. So I don't know if that addressed you specifically, but that's something that resonated with me.
Thank you so much for your comment. Thank you. So I think with that, yes, it's relying on your network, and for something like that where you'd want to come in at the front end with some information on the investment program, partnering up with your consultant or advisor on perhaps some, you know, pieces that would showcase those investment models is a good starting place, at least. Were there any other questions or comments?
Thank you. With regard to one of the things that, as we're building this for our own diocese, an investment program with different products on different time horizons for investments, one of the questions that has come up for us is how do we protect our parishes from themselves? Insofar as, you know, I think a lot of times if a lot of our parish leaderships are rural and some of them have a great in-depth understanding of finances, others don't, they might say, wow, I get a 15% return in this pool. I'm going to put everything in there, but I need to spend it, you know, next year. What things have you done to help parishes understand the differences, and help them, and that's probably open to everybody, but I don't know if that's something that comes up for people.
Well, our job at Concord for you, for other clients, is just to almost create a marketing book to help you, right, where you're having that conversation about time horizon and, their situation. We help create sort of that, just like any investment firm would, right? They go out to meet with a prospective client. They have a short presentation, executive summary, that will communicate just some of those things so you can help govern the process. I think many in here will have a different set of comments than we do, but even on the back end around some of those pools, when they're first started, there's an anxiety or a nervousness that some will overuse, like a short-term pool, put money in, get 8% return in a quarter, then take it back out. And it creates an administrative nightmare for a foundation to manage that. So some of it's handled on the front end, just kind of designing the parameters of those types of investments. I know some foundations have different withdrawal stipulations or liquidity parameters within the agreements for some of those pools, quasi-endowment. Not everybody does. It's an active conversation amongst different foundation boards. But just, those are some of the things that people do think about. Who wants it first, Bill or Kimberly?
Say time horizon. So one of the things that distinguishes our portfolio from many that are out there, even at the, you know, the local community foundation, is you have, you know, whatever their options are to invest in. And so when we go speak with the parishes or schools or even the individual donors, we're asking them when will these funds be needed? And nobody's ever asked that of them before. They haven't thought about that previously, God bless you, because they, everybody's focused on return, and return is wonderful, or fees sometimes, right? But to this portfolio that Concord established for us with a time horizon takes them beyond just those basics, and it asks them to think about what their needs are, what their goals are, what, if it's a donor, individual donor, what their intentions are. And that doesn't typically happen when you're talking about even our donor advised funds. We have multiple options. Do you use it as a charitable checking account where almost as much goes in as comes out within 1 year's time? Well, we have an option for you that still gives you some return with that short-term use. But do you bunch and bundle a lot? And are you using this as a charitable savings account instead? We have another option. So it's all based on time horizon, and I think that has been huge, talking both with parishes and individual donors, because typically that's not what they're asked when they are trying to choose a portfolio option. So it really distinguishes us, and it makes us donor-centric, parish-centric.
I was just comment on trying to educate the fund holders. We learned this from, I think, Minneapolis and Des Moines have done a good job of this, but we started last quarter hosting just a quarterly webinar with our investment manager. And this coming quarter, the focus is going to be, and I think we're going to try to increase it, is on asset allocation. Our model is that we have an equity, a diversified equity portfolio. We have a fixed income portfolio and a money market. And for better or for worse, we let them choose the allocation among all of those. And I think that's overwhelming. And so we're going to really focus on just offering more and more education, similar to the 401k world. You know, people are kind of used to that. They're kind of used to, you know, donor or, you know, participants in those plans get educated on their investment choices. And I think as a foundation, it's our responsibility to give that as much education as possible. And, you know, I love about 2 years ago, we started doing I used to be a 401k administrator, fun fact sheets. So each of our funds, we have a little fact sheet, similar to what you posted up there, and it just simplifies it, shows what the top 10 holdings are and all of that. That got us into trouble once. Facebook was listed and someone had a problem with that. So, anyway, that makes it interesting sometimes, but it is what it is.
No, I can't agree more, because it does really come down to transparency and education, and those really work together. But the education is a process. It's not something that's done over one meeting. It's done over consistent meetings, whether they're in person or webinars or mail outs of the fund fact sheets. All of those are ways to continue to stay in front of your donor community.
Well, I know we just hit 11 o'clock, so I want to thank from Concord everyone for your time today and your feedback. Patrick, I know you have a final comment or two?
Yeah,
or
just
do
final comment on evaluations. Again, it's session 58 in the Whova app. So, again, session 58. Again, thanks. How about a round of applause for our presenter?
Thank you. Thank you so much.